This is an interview with Mr. Donald Colvin for the Youngstown State University Westlake Terrace Oral History Project by Lisa Calories on 2nd December 1985 at YSU. Okay, Mr. Colvin, just to get started, can you tell me a little bit about yourself?
Well, I'm 33 years old, currently unemployed, student here at YSU, about this quarter. Married, 5 children, lifelong resident of Youngstown.
Okay. Where did you attend school? Your grade school?
Covington Elementary, Hayes Junior High School, Beaver High School.
You were a resident of Wesley?
Right.
From what years?
From 1956 to 1973, 74.
What events, maybe the 50s, 60s, 70s, what events that happened at Westlake, what stuck in your mind in particular? Any type of change at Westlake? Change maybe in qualifications to enter? Things in the atmosphere in general?
In reference to types of things that went on?
Yeah.
I can recall, they used to come to your house and check, see if you're keeping it clean, those type of things. I can't remember exactly how often, I think it was once a month. In comparison to now, when I go past, everybody had an assigned time to clean the laundry room. Everybody took turns. Other than they shared the responsibility of trying to keep the place up, cutting the grass, picking up paper. So you had to cut the grass, pick up paper. You had to dig your own grass around your apartment. Mm-hmm. It was your responsibility if you didn't. I imagine there was some sort of fine. Possibly there was a eviction notice served if you didn't. Our responsibility, I don't know if they still have that type of responsibility along with the maintenance staff that they have. We had to also do that as children, and I can recall cutting grass for the neighbors and picking the paper and doing the laundry. Every week, the laundry was clean every week, so you rotate it, so in return, kind of you had to do it or pay a fine.
Hmm. What was it like living in Wesley?
Well, in the early years, it was very quiet. I recall it as being a very happy time in my life. Again, being a young child, becoming a teenager, but it was a very close-knit family, not just your family, but the neighbors becoming a part of an extended family. Mm-hmm. What you didn't have and your neighbor had, it was yours. And what's yours is mine, what's mine is yours. Mm-hmm. Atmosphere. So we really felt close, and when people moved out of the neighborhood, we really felt a sense of loss. As we got older, it became a little harder. It seemed like it was tougher. We called them court. Each section was called a court. And that court was your family. And even if you moved to another section, in my particular case, I lived in 3 separate courts. One of them just came back to me actually about things that really stood out. One of the major things that happened at Westlake that I can remember is when they put the freeway in.
Mm.
Now, that was interesting because everybody said it couldn't be done. People living in the complex and from without. Several of the buildings, I remember one in particular, was twice as long as some of the other buildings, and they were wondering how they were going to get them across the street Now that's where Chase Pool is. So they moved all those buildings. I lived there in the area that they had to move across the street. And everybody was wondering how in the world they were going to do this. And they did it. The particular building, I recall one, but there may have been more. They'll be cut it in half and put it up on coasters, if you will, and took them across the street and put the freeway in.
Do you remember what apartment they were in?
I remember all three apartment numbers. let's see, the first one was 172. That's when we lived on Madison Avenue. Madison Avenue Expressway now. We lived at apartment 245, and that was on Ward Street, 39 Ward Street. And we lived at apartment 545, which was a Griffith Street address. They put you Griffith, not too far from Golden Gate Supermarket, or as commonly termed, the unemployment corner, that area. When they moved those buildings, I would have to say that was something.
Do you remember what year that was?
I can't. I would imagine it was had to be early 60s. It had to be. But that was...
Where did you, when you lived at Westlake, were there shopping centers in the area close by, or maybe some stores, or little grocery shops?
Well, there was a grocery store, as I recall, I think the name was Mr. Collins. That was the old gentleman that worked there on Griffith Street, a little small store, black donor, and you could get penny candy in those days. So if you had a nickel, you could eat candy almost all week. Then there was a store right across the street from Covington School, Moosey's. And, of course, Golden Gate Supermarket there on Griffith Street. And then J.D. Supermarket on Madison there, not too far from the university. As far as malls, they didn't exist like we know them today, but the Atlantic Mills was the place. I think it's Trumbull Supply or something now. It was somewhat of a thrift store. And take that long walk up Griffith Street to Atlantic Mills. And, that was the big outing, going to Atlantic Mills. And, shopping for your school clothes, you know. Mm-hmm. You venture out to Liberty Plaza with almost unheard of at that time.
How was how were the neighborhoods within Westlake? Were they segregated at first?
Segregated by design, I would have to say, possibly, but not necessarily to my recollection. It wasn't very mixed up in the early years that I lived there. The few white people that I can remember, they were in different courts. As time went on, maybe one or two here and there. And again, after almost 18 years, I can't recall too many. But I know in the early years that it wasn't all black. But in the area that I stayed, pretty much it's all black.
Were there any problems during the 60s with racial tensions?
As far as within the complex itself?
Mm-hmm.
Not real, real bad. Mostly from the outside during that time. I can recall one time in the 60s playing basketball off of Work Street. And I think they had the curfew on and they were riding pretty bad at that time. And my mother called me and we ran over to the apartment and she said, "What's going on over there?" And I said, "What do you mean?" And I looked back and hear somebody had set something on fire. And the playground was full of smoke. Again, playing, I wasn't aware of it. In other words, you can't see the trees or the forest. And
right.
Step back away from it. And I remember two my guys running away. Forest coming through the neighborhood and actually bawling people and people fighting. I don't recall.
You mentioned you were playing basketball. Did you use the Hagstrom House for the facilities?
The settlement, yeah. Commonly called the settlement, yeah. At that particular time, I was playing right in the court. Some courts were fortunate, if you will, to have basketball hoops, but very few that, in fact, the court that I lived in as a growing child, well, the first court, I was kind of young, I was 4 years old. And we had a basketball hoop, a basketball board, but there was no hoop. And there was never a hoop. So I was a teenager when I actually played on a real rim and net. And I think the court above us had a rim. And I was in my teens when I played on that. So we shot up against where the rim was supposed to be. That's
right.
How you got points. You throw it against that. As far as actually making buckets, that's off the question. But we did use the settlement house, Hatchman House. They had crafts and they showed movies. I think they were a nickel or something like that. You'd watch a movie. They had skating. And a lot of fun things for the kids back then. That was a really good out for us. But one thing that I remember in 1961, and the reason I remember the year, I was 9 years old and I was reading the paper about Vietnam. And it was really funny and it stands out today. I was thinking about it the other day. And we ran across the street. I went to the store to pay for the mom or something. And I was coming back and I was reading about this war in Vietnam. And I stopped one of the kids, a little older. And I said, "Oh, I won't have to worry about that. That's 9 years. I'll be 18 in 9 years." And 9 years later, the war was still going on. But I flunked the physical, fortunately or unfortunately, if you will. And I reflected back to that when I became 18, and I think supposedly they were taking lottery numbers up to 53 or 52 or something like that, but mine was 63, and they called me. So I remember that because when I got the paper, in the mail, I automatically thought back to that day when I was 9 years old, and I said, "Oh, that'll be over," and those are my exact words. And it stood out so vividly, and I said, "Oh, that'll be over." I said, "So that's 9 years from now." Mm-hmm. And it was still going on.
Something like that would make a big impression.
It came back instantly after I received my papers, but
right.
I didn't have to go. So, but a lot of guys did, a lot of my friends did. Some of them didn't make it back. Some relatives didn't make it back. So that was a tough time.
How old were you when your family moved into the West End?
I was 4 years old.
Do you recall anything about hearing your family mention about moving into Westlake, what they told you you were going to move, or what did you know about the Westlake Terrace homes before you can remember?
I remember saying we were moving to Westlake, and I remember the truck ride over. When we got there, the thing that I remember, they had these posts with chains throughout the, I don't know if you've been over
yeah.
And they divided the courts, and they were, they just seemed like, they were really in the grass, those in the grass was green. Oh, now, you know, you see dirt, dirt and rocks now, and green grass for days. Then we got there, it was really nice, I thought, at that time, as a child, you know, like sort of grass. And looking back on it, considering the amount of kids that were there, a lot of kids, you know, thinking you get there, it's, boy, everybody has kids, not knowing why. But there were a lot of kids. A lot of kids, and it seemed to me, as the children grew older, that's when a lot of the problems, if you will, be it home turmoil or society, as those children grew up, it became more hostile. A lot of them. I can recall one instance when I stayed on Worth Street, a gang from over by the university called Little Harlem. And I think that was the name of the gang too, Little Harlem. And they came through and they fight me. Well, actually, I was inside looking out. We're fighting. But that was when we got a little older. And I got a little tougher. When we moved to Worth, when we did move to Worth Street, it was like Golden Gates at that time was called, I don't know where I was, but I want to say Jeans, but maybe not. Maybe not. I want to say Jeans. And the last thing you wanted to do was to go to school at night. And it seemed to me, somewhere between, well, it would have had to been the very early 60s, toward the end, before you get to the 70s, something happened. You know, from that peace and quiet, and you know, you could leave your doors open and go around the neighborhood. And that was the last thing I wanted to do. I said, Mom, please don't send me to the store at night. I'm not up there. I just didn't want to go. As I got older, it was a lot easier. Again, it didn't seem as frightening. I can recall being afraid, not just in the dark, because you heard of different things happening. You know, you mentioned things that stand out. There was another incident in regards to Westlake that stands out even in my adult life. And there was a little girl that got killed. She was sexually assaulted and murdered. She lived on, I think Madison Avenue, right there. And they showed a picture in the paper of me. I thought, a really pretty girl. That, you know, I guess with the kids, it really, you know, it really scared us. I was a little older, and they, if I ever recall right, they picked this trunk up, like Andy Mayberry, the town, the old town drunk. And everybody said, no, he couldn't have done it. And as it turned out, I guess he didn't, or they didn't have enough evidence to convict him. But I think they used a spoon on or something, vaguely in my mind, I remember, on the paper. And then Tangela, Gibbons or Gibson or something like that. That was tough. That was really tough on the kids. And then there was, I guess a guy we all called Peeping Tom. Yeah, you know, sort of thought he did it. He sort of hung around the neighborhood. You sort of knew him, but you didn't know him. You'd see him, then you wouldn't. But you'd never seen the dog anybody. As kids and young teenagers, you know, walk through, you'd say, is that him?
Yeah.
And he'd disappear. So, I don't know.
Do you remember what was the process for your family to receive him? Did they have to fill out application papers? Were they interviewed by someone from the housing?
Right. In fact, she filled out an application and she was called. And at that time, Mr. Lautier was in charge. And he was very helpful. He was very helpful. He worked at the Y, so he was really, I guess I'm a father figure for a lot of us. And you could go in and talk to him. I can recall working. Rent skyrocketed. I can't remember the exact figures on the rent, but probably wasn't that much. But it jumped in comparison to the little piece of job I was getting to help my mom out. And I was quite upset about it. But and I worked there too as a teenager.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It was my first summer job. I worked with the maintenance staff. In those days, they, again, not to take anything away from the job that they're doing or attempting to do now, they really seem to be on top of it. You know, if you need something repaired, you know, they were there, as I can remember it. And you had your monthly, I believe they were monthly, it could have been weekly, your exterminations. Because the little critters were tough in those days. They'd almost steal your food from you. Rats, during that period, no problem. I understand now they're a pretty big concern in the lower half. But at that time, it wasn't. And then it seemed to me that they tried to put the younger people together. By younger people, I mean the younger mothers, mm-hmm. as opposed to some of the older women, and again, older at that time would have been like 30s, you know, that would have been older. But like the teenage mothers, mid-20s, like that, it seemed to be together. And even now, as we grew older, the section from Madison down wasn't totally for older people, but the lower end, they mostly put older people away from the kids, I guess.
What were your first impressions? As you said, you've seen the grass, you've seen the Jew. From where you lived before, did you think, well, this is a nice place, I'm glad I'm here.
Yeah. I would say that the early years in Westlake for me were, I'm glad I'm here. This is a really nice place. As I call it, clean, very, very clean, very warm. You talk about hot. Those apartments. they don't make heat like they used to. Oh boy.
Yeah, the steam heat.
Yeah. Oh man, you can turn it off. You hear it at night, it rattle, you know, and you can turn that knob and it would whistle for days and kick off heat like you wouldn't believe. Mm-hmm. It would be almost unbearable at night and morning. It was
better than being cold.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Now I look back on it, I wish I had some of that heat now.
You mentioned about the rent, how it skyrocketed. Do you remember how it was collected? Did you have to go down to the housing authority and pay, or did they come to you?
No. You went to the office there, right next to what's now the rescue mission. Then it was the old Y, the YMCA. You took the rent there. If you needed, since you mentioned that reminds me, you would take your rent money there, and then there was the building right off of Madison where the maintenance people are now housed. I would imagine they still are. If you needed any type of grass seed, shade repair, coming to get your paper folder for your turn, pick up paper for your lawnmower, grass cutter, mm-hmm. No power. You pushed it, that baby, and cut the grass. You picked it up there, and take it back if you needed anything. Any type of maintenance to the apartment that you need to go there and pick it up and report it.
Do you remember how the rules were enforced? You said about inspection, extermination, going to get these things, and cutting them off. How were they enforced? Was there a manager or someone ahead of each individual? You said court or
I would imagine. Again, from the office, they. In the early days, it didn't seem to me, now supposedly you were notified, but as a young person, it seemed to me always to be just in the wind that they were inspecting or that they were coming. And in listening to the older people talk, it seemed to me that they would pop in unannounced. And you really, that end of it was sort of negative, but not in the sense that you minded, because you wanted to keep the place up. But in remembering back, it seemed to be more of a harassment type thing. Not being old enough in the beginning to understand someone living with someone other than their husband in the household and that type of thing. I guess that's what they were calling themselves looking for. I mean, checking for shoes and clothes, men's clothing and that type of thing. It was probably, it became apparent that it was seeing the feel of the people, the older, by old I mean the parents, it was more of a harassment type of thing. An invasion of privacy, they seemed to feel like you could come in whenever you got ready. I guess now, I would imagine you have to announce yourself. And I guess the caseworkers and that, they don't even come to the houses anymore. It's a little call type of thing. But at that time, they did come. It seems like whenever they got ready. And even if you weren't there, which didn't seem right. But there was a general concern by the majority of the people that I lived around for the upkeep of the place. So it was more about this other way. Just inspired by constantly that we couldn't do anything.
Do you remember anyone that was asked to leave because of these rules that were broken?
I can recall a few instances where clothing, furniture, and the like were set on the street. So there were times when I guess they apparently did enforce that for whatever reason, whether it was a cleanliness factor or what, I don't know. But I do know that several times during the course that I was there, furniture was set on the street.
Do you remember, you said you lived at three different apartments in the complex. Do you remember any of the people that you look by, your neighbors, their names?
Oh,
what
yeah.
They're doing now?
Oh, yeah.
You still keep in contact with them?
Oh, yeah.
Long-lasting friendships?
Oh, definitely, definitely. The very first court that we lived at, again, those people, like that group of people were the ones that could call me Donnie and get away with it. They were like relatives. Other than that, I was Donald. Yeah, a lot of them have kids now. And believe it or not, some of them have gone back, have since moved, and then now live back in Westlake. The Jets, as they used to be called, Brick City, and Chase Pool area, Peyton Place. But yeah, a lot of them, I went to school with them. I see quite a few of them. But some of them moved out of town again. Those kind of hurt me look back. I guess now they've instituted an annual baseball game at Evans Field where the older guys play the new generation guys. And I've participated in the game, but I've watched it a couple times. Everybody seems to really enjoy themselves on that day.
Okay, if I would ask you just one question, pretend I didn't ask any other questions, I would ask you, what are your impressions of Westlake while you lived there between 56, you said?
56 and
73.
73 in the morning, did about 6 or 8 more after that, so I still had contact with it.
If you could sum it up in, say, maybe 3 to 5 minutes, what would you tell me about your impressions of Westlake?
Only during the course of the time that I was there?
No.
Can I bring myself up to date?
Yeah, and maybe show some comparison.
Again, I'm sure today that there's a lot of unity and developed friendships. But at that time, it was a very, very, very close family atmosphere. Once in a while, you get like a feud going between families or something. Not too often, not too often. I recall I had said one time, during the course of my coming up at Westlake after things got tough. By tough, I mean the area became a little hard. That if I could become a multimillionaire, that I would almost take, that I would buy Westlake and fix it like it should be. There are a lot of things that need to be done and should be done. People in some areas of Westlake are just existing, and others are kept quite well. I have a lot of fond memories of Westlake, most of them to do with the people of Westlake. I would have to say, in regards to some management of Westlake, Ms. Botero in particular, he was very instrumental in encouraging myself and other young men, I'm sure, women too, to try and do better, follow our educations and try to be the best people that we could be. I know when I left Westlake, I didn't want to leave. When I moved out, my mom was still there, and I didn't want to just not leave her. I didn't want to leave Westlake. And I told my girlfriend, my wife, who's my wife now, that we're moving back. You know, I wanted to go back and raise my family in Westlake because of the love and the togetherness that it seemed to breed for me. I'm sure that had a lot to do with my mom and the type of people that I grew up around. I went back to Westlake one particular evening, when of course I was working, and the guys were saying, "Get a new car. How you doing? How you doing this?" And for no reason at all, I took the gentleman I was talking to, pulled out a gun and shot him up in the air. And it was then that I realized that it had really changed, you know, and I didn't feel quite as comfortable. Because I would go back and go full time and my mom was there, toward the end of the 70s. And I would go back from time to time and just walk from the top to the bottom. And even though a lot was going on, I wasn't afraid. Then I went back a few years later, closer to the 80s, and I was afraid. I was afraid. You know, the younger, and I say younger, the teenage, two adults, you know, it seemed harder. Again, because of their circumstances, societal circumstances. And I was actually afraid, and I was hurt. I've since gone back in the last year or two, not really afraid, but sort of grieved that it deteriorated to the state that it has in some areas. It's as if nobody cares. It's as though Westlake's just there. But Westlake typifies to me now the state of Youngstown. Maybe Youngstown in particular for black people. And it's very, very impressive. There is no way. Now, and I said, and I know we got to end, I had said just a few moments ago that I told my wife, fiance at that time, that when we got married, that I wanted to go back. Now I say, and I've said, there's no way. I don't care what happens. That would be the last place I would go. That would be the last place I would let my kids come up. And again, no reflection totally on the people, because it's not totally their fault. It's just a tough, tough atmosphere. No, it's a totally different place. Yeah, and I still have a lot of friends, a lot of relatives. And those people, and like I said, when you're within the thing, you get used to it. You know, it becomes a way of life. You know, ducking bullets and fighting. And it wasn't all peaches and cream when I was there. We hit the pop trucks and the milder things, you know, kicked over some garbage cans, you know, for the bars, doing people physically harm. It was going on. But you try to avoid that, or those people that were into that. But you know, it was a lot of positive and good things. And Hackton House, at that time, I don't follow what you're doing too much now, but at that time, it was a very, very good place, and a very influential place for young people. But today, Westlake is a tough, tough place. You know, just the smell. The smell when you want to be part of it just stinks. And you know, it probably would offend some people a little bit upset because where you live, regardless of what it is, what it has become, you know, I would be offended if I was there. Somebody said it. Yeah, I know it. But you ain't got to say it. That's the way I would feel. But it's just, there's, even when it was making a change, there were some good sections and some bad sections. It's like a cancer. It's spread. Mm-hmm. You know, you had a few areas where people didn't take care of or at least, you know, but now it's like, it's almost taken over the whole complex, the entire community. It's really, really bad. They have a lot of work to do. I don't know if it would take clearing everybody out and starting from scratch, just burning the whole place down. Or if they could even begin to, I've seen where they have tried to remodel and redo some things, and they were doing some things when I was there, you know, storm doors, those type of things. But I just think that just, and they're old. They're old now. They're old, and they're not being kept up. So it's just, and you hate to say it was beyond help, because you would hope that some way, somehow, that some changes, some drastic changes would be made. And maybe, just maybe, some jobs. You know, jobs, and you fall into that, that atmosphere. It tends to create a feeling of depression, of uselessness. I can't make it. There's nothing I can do. But in the midst of all of that, I've seen some really tremendous people within that sector of the community, what somebody else might call a hard enough, tough characters. They're crying out. Mm-hmm. You know, they have a need. And in the midst of that, there have been people to come out and excel in spite of it all. You know, those people are surviving and really doing the things that a lot of us couldn't do if we had to. So they deserve a little applause for just being able to make it from day to day. Now, nobody has a right to take from somebody else or to make it from day to day. But given what they have, to go on, they were doing a lot. You know, they thought that they were doing everybody a big favor when they put benches on the unemployment form. Mm-hmm. You know, so what? You know, those type of things. Again, that's, you know, bringing society into it. And again, that's a little community and a place by itself. Like there's Youngstown, and then within the city of Youngstown, there's a city called Westlake, you know, Brick City. And people from the sticks, as we called it, they didn't understand. Those were people that were fortunate enough to be able to buy a house or to rent a house. You know, the ultimate goal of our parents, as we grew older, we realized was to get out of there. Right. And you know, they were trying to make things as happy as they could for us, and that's what we thought was. But as we got older, we realized that, hey, everybody's in there, they're trying to get out of here. And then when people get out, you know, a lot of people felt resentment towards, you know, I think you're too good, you know, now. Especially those that were close enough that they could still have some contact. But they're trying to get out. You know, it's a place that they put you into to see if you can fight your way out. Mm-hmm. And some people live and die right there in their entire lives. And what is now, nothing. It's a sad set of circumstances.
You want to add anything else?
No, just you know, it's been a while since I really thought about it. It's, you know, I don't know how close or how many people you've talked to that have actually been in a circumstance like that. And like I said, when you're young, regardless, even the young people now that are there, when I say young, I mean kids, you know, they see that as, you know, fine, that's home. You know, some of them, they're trying to make it here a lot harder, a lot tougher kids than we were, you know, because they have to be. You know, I mean, they're kids, I'm saying that those kids are here on drugs, but I'm sure that there's some problems with, you know, drugs and alcohol with the young kids. And, but their parents are trying to get out of that. You know,
using it as a stepping stone, wrestling to move to something.
You have to be now. Was, you know, I can say 20 years ago, it was a lot different than it is now. And 20 years before that, it was a whole lot different.
Right.
You know, it was making a change when we got there. You know, and we saw it go from being an ice bus. Not so nice place to where it is today. It's really turned around. It's night and day from the time that I got there to now. Night and day, you know, we describe. It's like what can be done, what should be done. You can't just point the finger at people that are there, I don't think. Joy, you just got a little bit, you should take care of it. You know, that's the feeling. But when you're in that situation, you know, you're looking at it a little bit, wanting to do this, wanting to do that. Can't do this, and can't do that. And the psychology of it would be, you know, the tougher times are, the worse you act. You know, instead of being a motivational thing for people to get up, you know, and then a lot of people have tried to get up, and they get up, they're missing a place to go, and there's no help. You know, given the opportunity, I'm sure that the majority of people there would leave. Given the opportunity, I'm sure the majority of people there would work. They don't like the condition that they're in, but it's gotten out of hand for whatever reason. So it's like, there's my fitness grass, watch my fitness. Yeah, it's like positive things are contagious, negative things are contagious also. It really hurts. It really hurts that the person that spent almost 20 years over there to go through there now and see it the way that it is in comparison to the way it used to be. Probably been, trying to turn around and kill somebody. We could almost isolate the times that the 20 years I was there that type of thing happened. But now it's commonplace, if not killed, shot, or stabbed. And those that have reported it, so there's been a lot of things going on that aren't reported. Now it's been, I don't know what it is. You know, makes you wonder.
Mm-hmm.
Makes you wonder. You can't do better. Again, not making excuses for anybody there, but they don't want excuses. They don't help. I don't believe help is there.
One opportunity.
That's right. And believe it if you will, and I close with that, and my daughter, but there are still a lot of people. lot of good people. Nobody would want to grow beer. Nobody wants to bottle it. And I wouldn't want, you know, you, my children, my sister, my mom, anybody that they have to walk through that right now. And that's a fact. You know, regardless of, so it's not a race thing. It's a survival thing.
Right.
You know, people should know that.
Right.
It's a survival thing.
Thank you very much.
No, thank you. I said something that